Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's C-A-N-N-A insider.com. Now here's your program. Hi, Canna Insiders. Just a quick note before today's interview gets started that my colleague Sinead Green will be interviewing today's guest.
Hey,
Sinead,
Matt.
Oh my God, you scared me. Sinead, I didn't realize you were in the sound booth.
Sorry about that, Matt.
Well, Sinead, since you popped into the sound booth here, this is a great time to just say hello to all the listeners since I was talking about you.
Sounds great. I'd love to. Hey, everybody. I'm Sinead Green, and I've actually been working with Matt behind the scenes for a couple of years now. I'm so excited to put on my hosting hat and really get a chance to engage with you and bring you some more great interviews. And I did want to say, if there's someone you'd like us to bring on the show, please feel free to email me your suggestions at sg@cannainsider.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I really hope you enjoy these upcoming shows.
Gosh, I want to get a hosting hat now that you mentioned it. I'm picturing a huge, like, purple velvet hat. What do you think about that?
I think that would look great on you, Matt.
Okay, really important, Sinead. We want you to do a good job, but not better than me. Does that sound fair?
We'll see about that.
Oh, all right. Well, everybody, enjoy this episode with the host, Sinead.
Today's guest is one of the most revered cannabis executives with over two decades launching, building, and leading some of the largest media companies in the space, from MJ Biz Daily to Dope Magazine and more. I'm pleased to welcome George Jage of Jage Media. George, thanks so much for sitting down with us today.
Well, Sinead, thank you so much. That's quite a grandiose introduction, being revered, but I'm just a guy and I love doing what I do.
Well, we're so excited to have you on. I know you were on the show a few years back, but you've done a lot since then. So I'm excited to get into that. But before we jump in, George, can you give us a sense of geography? Where are you in the world right now?
So I am out in the sunny Seattle area. We live on Bainbridge Island, which is just west of Seattle. You have to take a ferry to get here. It's really just such a beautiful part of the country. And I'm so glad that we live here.
Oh, man. I've heard there are a lot of good wineries on Bainbridge as well. You guys go to some wineries here and there?
Yeah, there's several on the island. We have some subscriptions to them, so we can get when they get their wines ready. A couple of them, actually, they'll let you volunteer to help bottle and process the wine during the season, and then you get like a couple free bottles for it. I haven't done that yet. I'm more of a IPA and a bourbon drinker, and my wife is the enophile?
Oh, yeah. Wine. Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a fair trade-off. Volunteering for some free wine, I would be there in a heartbeat.
Well, and it's just starting to get to be blackberry season, and like every street and row and kind of wild growth area has massive blackberry vines. So,
oh my gosh, that sounds like paradise. That sounds so nice. Very cool. Okay, so George, like I said, you've been on the show in the past, but that was quite a while ago. I think that was in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. So you've done a lot since then, and you have started Jage Media in the last few years here. So can you tell us what is Jage Media on a high level?
Sure. Well, Jage Media, obviously just kind of a placeholder corporate name. It was founded by myself and my wife, who's my business partner, Kim, and she ran a previous business with me, World T Media, World T Expo. And, you know, really, it's as a company, we saw an opportunity that, you know, cannabis at the end of the day is a consumer packaged goods industry. When you look at the most important kind of trade show and business media resources in a CPG industry, they're really brand or retail focused. And the only reason that we don't have anything on a national level for brands and retailers is because there isn't a national market because of the state bifurcation of all these individual markets. But we know that that's going to change. And we really started this company based on a conversation I've been having with Patrick Ray for, you know, close to 3 years after leaving MJ Biz Daily and MJ BizCon, that the market was going to shift. And we're at that kind of precipice where we are, you know, going to see the advancement of, you know, interstate commerce or federal legalization, and it is going to be a tsunami of change for our industry. And we want to make sure that the companies that have really carried our industry forward that are operating on a smaller state level have the opportunity to really expand into the national market when it comes.
Okay, great. And you kind of dived into your background a little bit there, but what you just mentioned is really only the tip of the iceberg. So can you share a little bit about your background in B2B media and how you first got started in cannabis?
Sure. To answer the second part of that question, I first got started in cannabis after discovering the devil's lettuce and at a very young age and expanding that into a very small entrepreneurial herbal distribution business while I was in high school and college.
Nice.
So I've had a relationship with the plant for some time. After leaving college, I had an opportunity to help my father's business. He was an apparel liquidator. He was going through some changes in his business. He needed some help. And we had an opportunity to create a trade show for the off-price apparel industry. And these are people that would liquidate excess manufacturers' inventory at the end of the season's good at end of the season, or buy distressed assets or stuff that got stuck in customs that just needed to get sold cheap. And they would turn around and sell it to the TJ Maxx's and Marshalls. They were separate companies at the time, and you know, other regional discount, you know, apparel stores. And it was really interesting because, you know, they all independently, you know, set up these suites around town, you know, kind of around the big manufacturer show. And the jobbers, as they're called, weren't really welcome there because they would be selling, say, Tommy Hilfiger's goods at 70% below what Tommy Hilfiger was selling them for. So, it was really fascinating because, you know, what they had in their inventory was, you know, what they had to sell. They weren't manufacturing, they couldn't make more. And they lived and died by every deal. I mean, like these people were hardcore merchants and purveyors of products. And a lot of our clients, you know, did 70 to 80% of their annual sales at our two and trade shows that we did a year.
Wow. Okay. And so you mentioned World Tea Media and World Tea Expo.
Sure.
So you've spent a lot of time in the tea and cannabis industries at this point. Have you seen any parallels between the two over the years?
It's incredibly fascinating how closely related they are. After we sold the off-price show, I moved to Las Vegas and I had started a couple other non-business media related companies. But I started a trade show for tea really because somebody had mentioned, you know, is there a trade show for tea? I saw there wasn't. I was fascinated by it and launched that company. You know, one of the things, you know, from a commercial standpoint that I saw when starting that is there really wasn't a good understanding or model around what tea retail looked like. It was somewhat challenging for somebody to have a tea retail place where somebody would come in and maybe spend $10 or $12 on a pot of tea and then sit at a table for 2 hours expecting free refills for water versus a coffee shop where you have that very high turn and you know, can kind of have multiple instances that you can sell a customer that's sitting at a table. I think that paralleled a lot of the cannabis industry when I got in 2014 of really defining and understanding what the retail model looked like, the strong need for education in a very early stage market. Like tea's been around for a long time, so is cannabis, but the specialty tea market, which we really focused on, was relatively new and certainly, you know, very exciting for people who are passionate about it. That was another similarity. Like the people that were in the tea industry were like wickedly passionate about tea, and like sharing this experience with people. The same way that people in cannabis are like, oh my God, you've got to try this like amazing, you know, plant medicine for people. On a scientific standpoint, you know, tea has a lot of flavonoids and catechins that also cross your blood-brain barrier and actually have a psychotropic effect on your brain, not nearly to the same extent that you would expect with cannabis, but you know, there's things like L-theanine, which is a non-essential amino acid that actually increases alpha wave activity in your brain when you drink tea that creates calmness. And so alpha waves are when you're meditating, you have a lot of alpha waves going on. And this is why Buddhists have used, you know, tea in their meditation practice, because the L-theanine creates that calmness while the caffeine creates that kind of alertness, right? So it's kind of a calm state of relaxation that tea creates for people. And then on the historical side, that was really fascinating. And I didn't know this until I was just entering into the cannabis industry. Tea has been accredited to being discovered by Emperor Shen Yang, who lived some 5,000 years ago in China and is deemed the father of modern herbal medicine. Legend has it that he had a translucent stomach. So when he would ingest herbs and plants, he could see what was happening inside his body. I don't think that was truly the case, but certainly I think he was very tuned into it. But I found out that he's actually also attributed for discovering cannabis and wrote quite a bit about using cannabis as a plant-based medicine, like I said, 5,000 years ago in China.
Wow. I had no idea. I've never heard that before. That's really fascinating.
The biggest difference was that, you know, in the tea industry, it's you know, very commoditized. Truly a global industry. It's the second most drank beverage next to water, but it's such thin margins, and there wasn't a lot of commercial opportunity there. It was kind of a difficult business, and seeing kind of all of those similarities and then seeing the exuberance around investment capital and growth opportunities in cannabis was the biggest differentiator, I would say.
Very interesting. Okay. George, getting back to your background, since you last came on the show, you have not only been president of MJ Biz Daily and MJ BizCon, but also CEO of Dope Media, where you led the startup to its acquisition by High Times. So what was the switch from business to consumer media like? Were there any challenges or some lessons maybe that you took away from both experiences?
Absolutely. When I was running MJ BizCon, I came in the industry as a president of the company. There was one full-time employee, Chris Walsh, who is now the CEO. Great guy. And a good friend. And, you know, unfortunately, after, you know, growing the company to 20 tabletops to well over 1,000 booths at the convention center, I had some contract disputes with the owners of the company. They couldn't get resolved and ultimately led to an executive divorce with them. And I wanted to be able, and there was some litigation that needed to be resolved. And so I wanted to stay in the cannabis industry. Like, I just love this space. I think it's so exciting. There's so much opportunity for growth. And, you know, it's just meeting the people that are in this industry and the passion around it really fuels me. And so I was, you know, presented with the opportunity to kind of step into Dope Magazine. The founders of that company had built a tremendous brand. And I always kind of looked at that consumer media space saying, in business media, you have a very finite audience that you're target people that are actively working in the industry versus a consumer media space where you really have this kind of blank canvas that everybody could potentially be your customer and somebody you could engage with your media platform. So I was really intrigued by the opportunity and the challenges that presented. Dave Tran, the CEO at the time of Dope Magazine. I mean, I just, hats off to him. I mean, he's such an authentic and kind and passionate human being. People who know him as probably one of the funnest guys in the industry. But that's Dave. Like, he wakes up and wants to help people. And I've just watching him was fascinating because he could walk up to somebody he's never met before and have a conversation with them. And they like walk away feeling like that they just got reunited with their long lost brother. and he can also go into a room of 200 people and start dancing by himself in the middle of the dance floor and everybody going, who is that guy? He's having way too much fun. I want to hang out with him.
Wow.
but he's, you know, listen, he's also a really smart guy. And, you know, as much as he's got a kind of a brand of being, you know, party, the Tranimal, as we called him, he's really smart. And most importantly, a incredibly compassionate and authentic human being and also a good friend. But the opportunity with that company is that they really, you know, started out really early on. They caught fire. They raised a bunch of money and grew really fast. And that can be really challenging for businesses. So there was the need to kind of really reset things and find a path for them to reach profitability. Unfortunately, what I've seen in the consumer media space and, you know, companies like, Cultivate, Mary Jane, you know, even High Times, Dope, and all of those consumer media assets that are out there, I don't know if anybody's really cracked the code how to create a very profitable business. And at some point somebody will and create that success story, for consumer media. And, you know, one of the things that coming into Dope, early on in the industry, I think it's common to see all of these different opportunities you want to explore simultaneously. I call it squirrelitis. And, you know, one of the things, like, for example, that Dope did was they had these bud tender appreciation days. They called them the bad events. And the concept was brilliant and the execution was great and the engagement was fantastic on those events. But, you know, the idea behind trying to really kind of corral the bud tenders and being able to create a path for the brands to be able to educate them about their products and create some brand loyalty amongst the people who have the most influence with the consumer is really challenging. And, you know, to do that because of the high transitions in that those roles, you'd almost need to go into individual localized markets and do two or three events a year. And if you start looking at that on a national scale, even back in, you know, 2017 and 18, before, you know, all these other states have legalized, I mean, you're talking about really needing to do like 300 plus events a year to make those effective. And what I saw as the opportunity is that as a publication in the space, that Dope Magazine should really be focused on educating the consumer upstream so that they're aware of what the products are, you know, create that discovery, that intrigue, that understanding, and take away that stigma around those products so that the consumers became more empowered when they went in the store and weren't so reliant on the bud tender to help them make the decisions. You know, I think any retail, you know, person should always be well versed in the products that they're selling to be able to explain them to consumers. But the reality in cannabis is that most of the people, and certainly the people, the new consumers in our market, go into a store and, you know, have no idea what products are what and what the differences are. And the brands and the products in our industry are so powerful, right? Like, I mean, the concept of brand is how does somebody create an emotional response to, you know, seeing, touching, feeling, tasting, or trying that product. In cannabis, it's a very powerful response. You know, it's a psychotropic response. So, you know, this product is going to have a very profound effect on what you do, you know, how you feel. You know, how do you differentiate your product of making people feel the way that they want when they try it, that differentiates it from other brands in the cannabis space? Again, that's just the stuff that I love thinking about and talking about. That I don't know if there's an answer to that.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about MJ Brand Insights and maybe kind of what your goal is and who your target audience is with that media platform.
Sure. Well, as a business media company, you know, typically, you know, our business model does rely a lot on our events to generate revenues and profits to continue to be able to kind of build a community and create value to an audience and really help lift up an industry. So, you know, having a content platform like MJ Brand Insights is really critical for us to create an opportunity to engage with people on a regular basis, on a day-to-day basis, not wait every year for an event or every 6 months for an event, and offer them something of value for free as kind of an olive branch to engage with them and ask for some of their time or their attention and maybe their email address. But before I talk about MJ Brand Insights, I want to give a shout out to Felisa Rogers. She's our managing editor. She's written for The Guardian and some other major Salon and other major publications. She is absolutely a rock star. And if you have a chance, I think it was in The Guardian. They did a story about her on 420 that really talked about growing up with her dad, basically growing pot in Oregon, you know, kind of, you know, well before legalization. You know, growing up and experiencing having the SWAT team kick down her door and take her away in handcuffs. And listen, it was, you know, there's a lot of harm and damage there. And, you know, but there's also hope and aspiration there. But she's really an amazing human being. And we're incredibly fortunate to have her on our team. From a content standpoint, we also have a strategic partnership with BDSA, one of the leading market intelligence and consumer insights company in the space. Have been around for a long time, as most people in the industry know them. But they contribute content on a regular basis. And we're really, you know, looking for like the thought leadership, not trying to be a daily news bulletin. You know, there's a lot of publications out there doing that well. I'm not trying to cover the regulatory and, you know, aspects of the industry because, you know, Tom Angel at Marijuana Moments doing a phenomenal job of that. But really providing something different that's talking about, you know, insights and actionable intelligence to help people perform better in their roles in the business. We recently published an article by Chuck Underwood, who's been a good friend for a long time, And he was one of the founders of generational marketing strategy as kind of a academic science of really understanding what defines, you know, Gen Xers and baby boomers, and looking at that their behavior and their kind of worldview gets formed during their formative years before they reach adulthood at 18. So it's really kind of like 12 to 18 years old that events happen in the world that influence how they're going to behave towards marketing, how they're going to act in the workplace. Like, we used to joke when Gen Y started entering the workplace that they would just text you that they're quitting and or post it on Twitter. But you know, that's obviously a little bit of a misrepresentation. I don't want to slam any Gen Ys for that. But there's certain things that happen in these generations that do impact their behaviors in the marketplace. And understanding the science behind generational marketing strategies can help marketers be more efficient in targeting certain segments of the population that they want to engage with.
Absolutely. What would your advice maybe say to a young brand who's just getting going? What would your advice be in terms of generational marketing, how they could maybe implement that to really dial in the demographics there and figure out who their niche is?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's so many new brands coming in the market. It's really an exciting time for our industry. And, you know, some people would argue that the biggest brands in our industry haven't yet been introduced. I don't know if that's the case. I mean, there's some companies really making some big moves these days. But, you know, what's great about this is really kind of this post-prohibition of alcohol, you know, again, over again for cannabis. And, you know, companies like Seagram's and Bacardi and, you know, Southern Wine and Spirits. I mean, you're talking about some of the wealthiest, you know, privately held companies in the world that have been created, you know, in the alcohol space. And we expect to see the same in cannabis. But, you know, as far as generational marketing strategy, when you really listen, and I was fortunate to listen to Chuck speak at a different conference before I had him come and speak at a couple of mine. You know, you listen to him break down kind of what those formative events are. And like for Gen X, which I'm a Gen Xer, like, you know, there was, you know, rising divorce rates. So it was typically, you know, most of the children were raised, you know, by a female parent who was also going back to work. And so they were latchkey children. And the idea of having dinner around the family table had kind of been abandoned. And so there was this kind of despondency amongst Gen Xers that they were a kind of a lost generation and everything else. And I'm like, wow, like that all happened to me, right? Like, I understand that. And it made me distrustful and also resourceful. And you look at the baby boomers, and they didn't have just one revolution. They had the sexual revolution. They had the, you know, women's rights. They had, you know, social equality and all these different drug revolutions. And, you know, they're kind of this empowered baby boomer, like, you know, that they can do anything and they're going to live forever and forever young. Like, you don't ever want to market to them like in your golden years, because that will offend the hell out of them. they don't want to be perceived as old, but they're also at a point in their life where their body aches a little bit, and, you know, salves and, you know, low dose products are really popular amongst that group. So how do you communicate to them that this product's going to make them feel forever young and really resonate with that audience, that like you're going to feel like you did when you were in your 20s and you were, you know, had long hair and were protesting, you know, at Haight-Ashbury, right? So, you know, I think that there's some really powerful nuggets in there. And again, Chuck's going to be doing a series and drilling down on each generation and what those kind of events were that define their worldview and how they're going to react to certain messaging in the marketing space.
Okay. Wow. Okay, great. I'll definitely have to check out Chuck's series there. That sounds really fascinating, just the psychology behind generational marketing. I really, that's all new to me. So I'm very fascinated by that.
Yeah, so, he's written a couple of books, and he's actually, they've aired a couple of PBS specials that he's hosted.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, I'll have to definitely check that out. Okay, so George, MJ Brand Insights, that's really just the media arm for MJ Unpacked, which is a big event that you have. You got your first in-person event this October in Vegas. I know you had a series of 3D virtual summits last year, but can you share a little bit about this year's upcoming event and what kind of sparked the idea for MJ Unpacked?
So when we started the business back in 2019, you know, kind of built out the business plan and you know, laid it out, went to get to raise some capital around it. You know, the idea again was that this is a CPG industry and that technically in the future, the biggest show or the most important event in our industry didn't exist yet. And we wanted to be in the best place to manifest that. So, and we raised our capital in February of 2020. And the business plan at that time was to run a series of state-focused executive conferences that were exclusive for brand and retail executives. Not a big pan-industry event, letting anybody in willing to pay a ticket price, but really creating a high return on objectives by having the right people in the room and keeping it exclusive. Come March, obviously, everybody's plans got laid to waste in 2020. So we did do a number of virtual events, and I know you want to talk about that a little bit later. But you know, what happened, you know, kind of at the end of 2020 was, you know, we saw that, you know, there was a good chance Biden would get elected, and people believe that the Senate and the House would both flip. That, you know, Biden did get elected. The Senate didn't flip. Well, the House was already democratically controlled. But the Senate didn't really flip until January with the Georgia runoffs. And that was really exciting. But I saw that there was a couple of key factors that were going to happen in the marketplace. One is, you know, everybody was going to kind of consolidate their events into late 2021, kind of bringing it back to market. So instead of, you know, our industry going to an event in February and one in May and July and September, people were going to really probably go to one or two events in the fall of 2021. The other thing was that, you know, no events in our industry that on a national level actually qualify their audience. They're more transactional in nature, you know, buy a ticket, buy a booth, buy a ticket, buy a booth. And we wanted to create an event that was really differentiated. There's so many events in our industry. Some of them have kind of waned away a little bit because of the pandemic, but, you know, I didn't want to come to market with more of the same. I don't think that that's adding value. And I also don't think that that's where the puck is going. So we decided to launch a live event in October in Las Vegas. It is the same week as MJ BizCon, the company I formerly ran. And that was also strategically a decision because, you know, I've talked to so many of the brand and retail executives and I've seen it happen and the investors that they go to Las Vegas during MJ BizCon, but they don't really need to go to a show to look for light bulbs and label makers anymore. They're really going there to set up business meetings, and they're scattered all around town, hosting, you know, meetups at a lobby bar or getting a suite at a hotel. And that's really inefficient, and people are wasting time in cab lines and hotel elevators. But we really wanted to create an event that created that exclusivity and that kind of feel and productivity of an executive conference where 4 out of 5 people in the room are going to be relevant to you. There's somebody you want to talk to. And create the space really for them to sit down and have a conversation to get to know each other, not just hand them a business card or get their badge scanned, but really create an engagement opportunity that we believe leads to a higher level of transactional value than the typical trade show experience.
Okay, great. And so kind of going into that, I see you have a lot of various events planned for that weekend, from investor pitches to even a Blues Brothers concert. So can you share a little bit about that agenda for that weekend and who is attending?
Sure. I don't want to call our show an onion, but it does have a lot of layers. you know, we're doing our event on Thursday and Friday. On the Wednesday before, we're going to have a brand-only mixer and a retailer-only mixer. And it's really just, you know, taking the time to have the conversations with our target audience and understanding what their need sets are. You know, and the brands are looking to engage with brands from other states and explore licensing and partnership opportunities. The retailers are doing the same thing. I mean, you know, they're looking to acquire additional licenses or existing businesses. They're also looking to create partnerships to create a multi-state brand the same way that brands are doing that currently through licensing agreements. So we want to kind of really create some intimacy around that to kind of kick off the conference. The event itself, when it starts, BDSA, again, is a strategic partner, not just of MJ Brand Insights, but also MJ Unpacked, will be, you know, leading off with an incredible data session. Kelly Nielsen, who joined their team a few months back, she comes from Nielsen Media. There's no relationship to her last name and the company's name. You know, and then we've got some really fantastic sessions. And this is our, you know, the way we're designing our event gives us the ability to really elevate the conversation. Like, and no disrespect to the great sessions that, you know, NCIA or MJ Biz or, you know, Cannabis World Congress, you know, offers, but they're trying to do, you know, 50 different topics and they have 70 or 80 sessions. It's like, how deep can you get, right? You can't. And so by keeping our event focused allows us to really focus on high level retailer and brand pain points, real success stories, actionable intelligence. You know, we're bringing in a gentleman, Michael Spumelli, that like my wife and I talked to him and within like a minute and a half, he was able to tell us exactly what roles we play in the company and how we effectively communicate with each other and what our strengths are. He's really great at helping build teams. So we want to bring that, like having the right team and having talent on your team is such a critical thing of importance. We're bringing in, as I mentioned, we have the Blues Brothers concert. Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi are going to take the stage with Christy Hefner, Hugh Hefner's daughter, really kind of talking about, you know, CPG brands. I mean, you know, Dan's got his Crystal Skull Vodka line. Jim's such an iconic, you know, figure in our industry. And Christy Hefner obviously has had a very central role in building the Playboy brand. So that's going to be a fantastic session. But, you know, it's content around, you know, how do you localize, you know, your retail location in new markets, right? Like, because if you go and take a store, Sinead, where are you located?
I'm in Bend, Oregon.
Okay, so you're in Bend, Oregon. You take that same store concept that appeals to you in your market and try to drop it in Florida or in Massachusetts, you know, you might not have the same response. So it's, you know, really understanding those localized nuances that you can really create a successful retail footprint, you know, well beyond your localized market. You know, partnering with your community, you know, brands, how do you partner with the retailers to sell more product? Really key topic for the brands in the space, because right now the relationship with the consumer exists almost exclusively with the retailers. And there's certainly case studies for that existing in other markets like Whole Foods, for example. I mean, Whole Foods owns the relationship with the consumer in a lot of cases. But ultimately, if we continue to kind of migrate towards the alcohol industry, you know, model, the brands are going to be the ones that own that relationship. But right now, because of the limitations on advertising and marketing, the brand's best bet is to really partner with the retail store and find ways that they can support their activities and the sale of their brand in store. We also, you know there's a lot of M&A activity. Andy Williams, who recently sold Medicine Men to Columbia Care for $43 million. We'll be moderating a panel that talks about integration best practices for merging your company. You know, we've got a great session talking about the future of cannabis consumption, which, you know, to me is, I think, you know, really the next generation topic for our industry is how do we build a successful on-premise consumption model? You look at the alcohol industry again, $200 billion in sales in the US, 48% is on-premise consumption. So a lot of things are happening right now that are kind of precursors to us seeing kind of a cannabis lounge bar, going to a restaurant and being able to order a cannabis infused iced tea at some point, is that product development of companies like Can or Vivin Oak, who's got a cannabis infused wine in California, or, you know, I mean, you know, well beyond, you know, what we saw originally in the market from a beverage standpoint, which was 100 milligram, you know, 16 ounce bottles, of really having that fast acting, low dose, so you can go to a social lounge and have multiple consumption instances and have a good time. You know, but when you start seeing interstate commerce and the ability for these brands to not have four or five state operations, but start creating some economies of scale and some production efficiencies, is going to be a huge valuation. And then I think, you know, the federal legalization and the development of on-premise consumption lounges is going to just send this industry to the moon. Everybody talks about how big is the industry going to be. I see no reason that the cannabis industry can't exceed a $200 billion industry that alcohol is, because it's safer, it's better for you, it's less harmful to society. We're going to get the cannabis industry or the world, you know, paying attention to cannabis instead of alcohol someday soon.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So, George, going on that, if you had a crystal ball, when would you say we're going to see our first national cannabis brand?
Oh man, that's such a loaded question. you know, because there's some brands out there. You look at like Select and Wana and Wild and you know, Can, for example. I mean, like you could say that those to some extent are national brands, but you know, they're not. I think, you know, we define a national brand when we have a national market, right? Mm-hmm. So somebody can be producing a product that you can get in every single state, I think is really kind of the starting line of when we'll see a national brand. And, you know, there'll be some mix-ups and some stumbles at the starting line for some companies that you think might be in the pole position. We won't know who's going to win that race until the race truly starts.
Absolutely. George, something you said a second ago, it really seems with MJ Unpacked, you guys are really lowering the entry to barrier for young brands that are looking to access capital and even just network. So I know you guys have multiple investor pitch sessions at MJ Unpacked this year. What are some good things that take a pitch from good to great, would you say?
Well, listen, you know, access to capital is key for the brands and the retailers in the space. And, you know, with, you know, tied in with the fact that we've got all these venture capital firms already setting up in suites at our show, marketing our event as open to accredited investors that are actively investing in the cannabis space, you know, we'll have a lot of investment capital there. And a number of the MSOs that are looking for acquisition opportunities. So, you know, we also brought on Deborah Johnson, who worked at ArcView for a number of years. She's really kind of managing our investor engagement opportunities. And we're creating what we call the money stage. This is really kind of like a micro cap type of event for companies that have that corporate presentation. So only people allowed in that room will be people that are have identified and themselves as an accredited investor and verified that. You know, I've seen a lot of pitches in this industry. Anybody who's on that side of the world looking at Dex, no, it takes a lot. Fortunately, I had Patrick Ray do a lot of coaching with me when I went through the Canopy Boulder program. You need to be concise. You need to be able to, you know, tell the story of, you know, why your product will be different in the marketplace, that you have the right management team, you have the right vision for the business, because anybody's business plan today is going to be different tomorrow. And as long as they have confidence in the team that's executing on that plan, we'll make the difference. You know, so without going into a 2-hour discussion about what makes a good deck, what makes a good pitch, I think it's, you know, be authentic, you know, really sell on how you're different and your product will get traction in the marketplace or define what traction you've already gotten. And don't be afraid to make the ask.
Those are some great tips. Yeah, I appreciate you offering that advice to our listeners who are just now getting into the game. That's really helpful. So, George, on the flip side of that, what advice do you have for our listeners who are looking to invest? Anything they should look for in a brand? Any red flags?
You know, I mean, I think that, you know, you got to make sure that, you know, the company, I mean, through the due diligence process, you really want to make sure the company is buttoned up, has good legal representation and has the required licenses for them to operate, that they have the vision to scale the business. You know, on the licensed operator side of the business, I mean, we've certainly seen companies that have fallen from grace. I forget the name of the retailer that, you know, kind of got busted for what they call looping, where people were able to go into the store multiple times throughout a day and buy massive amounts of cannabis and then be able to bring it out of state. And they completely destroyed that business and it went glove or got shut down by the Colorado you know, Marijuana Enforcement Department. So I think, you know, making sure that, you know, you do some due diligence, not only on the business plan and that they have the proper licensing, but also the operators. There's, you know, some people that, you know, kind of have unusual relationships with ethics in our industry. From time to time, you know, make sure that they're committed, that they've got some skin in the game, that they're ready to go, that they're all in, and then support them. You know, the operators in the space, like the investors that we have in our company, have been incredibly accretive to our success. And, you know, I talk to them, you know, frequently. I send them updates so they know what's going on and keep them bought into what we're doing. There's always kind of a interesting relationship between the capital and the management of any organization. So, you know, use that to your advantage and make sure that the management's open to, you know, having you involved as an investor to help support them when you're asked.
Okay, that's great. Thanks so much for that, George. So I'd like to, as we wrap up here, I'd like to move into some personal development questions. First question, is there a book that's had a big impact on your life you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I know Matt loves asking that question last time. A book that I read most recently, I thought was absolutely fantastic, is a book called The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. It addresses what he refers to as an upper limit problem. That really, like, our ability to fully actualize ourselves is all self-inflicted. So, you know, being able to recognize when you kind of run up against these upper limit problems that we've created for ourselves and realize that we're the only ones holding ourselves back from being able to break through that. It's really a great book. I think it would kind of fall in kind of a self-help type of category, but we're all human beings. We're all flawed. I've got plenty of my own misgivings and defects as a human, but being able to accept those and recognize those and then be able to resolve those, I think, is what allows us to grow as human beings. So love that book very much.
Okay, great. So George, probably I would imagine in your last interview with Matt, this is where he probably would have asked you a Peter Thiel question, but I've got an equally thought-provoking question for you here, I think. You can only watch 3 movies for the rest of your life. Which do you choose?
Wow. First and foremost, be the Blues Brothers. As a kid, I had my VCR. I taped it when I had Select TV. This is like back in like where HBO was called QTV. So I'm dating myself a little bit there for some of your older listeners. I must've watched that movie 100 times when I was a kid. I just love that movie. I've gone back and watched it a few times recently. Love that movie. Miracle, about the 1980 Olympic hockey team. Every time I watch that, like, there's just goosebumps in my hair and my back and my neck standing up and just like, it was such an awesome movie of kind of the underdog, right? And, somebody took a bet on a team that nobody thought had a chance and they surprised the world, right? You know, the last movie, I don't know, one of the movies I love watching my family is Secretariat, but I think probably the other movie I would also probably like to throw in there is what I would consider my top 5 sports movies of all time is called Let It Ride with Richard Dreyfuss. It's technically not a sports movie. It's basically a story about a degenerate horse gambler, a horse better. But I just love the raw humanity of that movie. Like, he's just like, he'll go into a bathroom, there'll be an attendant there, and he'll have this internal dialogue with himself. He's like, all right, if people need to go to the bathroom every 2 hours, so you have this many people here, and if they leave an average of 50 cents a person, like calculating in his mind, like the exact productivity of every job in the world. Right.
Oh my God.
And it's a hysterical movie. If you haven't watched it, I strongly encourage it.
Wow. I haven't seen that. I'll have to check it out. That sounds so good. Okay. Very cool. All right. Well, George, as we wrap up, how can listeners find you and maybe connect with you online?
They can find about our business by going to mjbrandinsights.com and about our event for mjunpack.com. We have a site, jagemedia.com, if you want to look at who is on our advisory board and a little bit more about our mission and our values. We certainly are on social media at mjunpacked, at mjbrandinsights, and they can reach me at george@jagemedia.com.
All right. Great. Well, George, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. And we wish you the best of luck with MJ Unpacked this year.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sinead. I really appreciate that. And give Matt my best. I love his smooth, silky radio voice. He's really been a pioneer, and I'm glad to see you join his team. Canada Insider was a podcast before podcasts were cool. And you guys have how many episodes under your belt now?
Oh man, I think we're closing in on 360, I think. Yeah, so quite a lot.
Fantastic. Well, listen, it's been an honor. It's been a privilege. Really appreciate what you guys do for the industry, really, with the storytelling and having people come on and talk about what makes them passionate. I'm a big fan and avid listener of your podcast, so please keep up the great work.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments. Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider. Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. Please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canna Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.